Welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 51st episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. And this is our first show in our new pre-recorded format and in our new home here at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeCrochet.com, your source for great crochet patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to AllFreeCrochet.com and do so now. While we're on the subject, I want to welcome the new listeners from AllFreeKnitting.com and AllFreeCrochet.com. I'm thrilled to be here with you today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it, and I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Thank you for making the move with us to our new home and format. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. Before we get to our interview today, I wanted to make a quick announcement about something kind of cool that's going on. Our friends over at FaveQuilts.com and Leisure Arts are doing something special with Project Linus. As you know, Project Linus is a wonderful charitable organization that donates blankets to children who desperately need them. If you'd like to create and donate a blanket for a child, check out how at FaveQuilts.com. Blankets can be knitted, crocheted, or sewn, or even quilted. And everyone who donates a blanket is automatically entered to win a prize bundle from Leisure Arts valued at over $100. For more information, you can visit FaveQuilts.com. And I just want to say kudos to FaveQuilts.com and Leisure Arts for putting together this very cool campaign. Okay, my guest today is one of the most talented and charismatic men I have ever met. He has gone from unknown crafter to world-famous lifestyle guru in just a few short years. Fans of him know him from his many published books on crochet and knitting, PBS television shows, his blog, his line of products distributed worldwide, and his hand-dyed yarns. It's been a while since we've heard from him, and I thought it would be fitting to have him as the first guest in our new format and at our new venue. I'm speaking of my good friend Drew Imborski, a.k.a. the Crochet Dude. Drew joins us this morning from Houston, Texas. Good morning, Drew, and welcome back to the show.
Well, hello, Benjamin. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you back. It's exciting, this whole move of the show.
I think it's a really good move. I'm very excited about it. I like that you're going to be reaching out to a lot more crocheters. I think this is great.
Well, and you know that that I have crocheters in my heart, but you know, there are times where I think that I have failed crocheters on my program. Again, just not enough crochet guests.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to have the people are following on your show. But I think it's also just a matter of where you're. It's all about location. So I think where you are now is perfect because there are a lot of crocheters here.
Yeah, it's I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, thank you for being on the show. I think it was only appropriate that you be on the show. You know, you're a past champion of the show. It's good to have you back. It's about time that our Fiber Hooligan listeners got to find out what you're up to because you got some things going on. And but before we go to that, how are things out in Houston? Is it beautiful there?
It is so beautiful here. Like I said last time on the show, you know, when you move to Houston, you get this letter in the mail from the mayor, and she says, we have to sign this contract that we won't tell people how beautiful Houston is. You know, we allow them to think it's so hot you can't stand it, but it's really not. It's actually pretty much paradise here all year round. So, yeah, everything's great here. It was a little cold this week. I mean, it only hit 70, and, you know, there wasn't any humidity, so we all had to wear jackets. But other than that, you know, it's quite beautiful.
Well, we won't even talk about the weather because you know where I live. And yeah, okay. Yeah, you're just laughing at me over there, aren't you?
I heard it's snowing in Chicago today.
Oh, my. Yeah, it's not that bad. It's a little brisk out, but, you know, we won't go into that right now. So, again, great to have you back on the show. You really are a wonderfully inspirational man. And for our existing listeners or our new listeners who may not know about you, I thought we'd just jump right in and ask you to give us a little history about yourself. Drew, who are you and where did you come from?
Where did I come from? Well, I'm a lifelong crocheter. I started crocheting when I was five. I'm the youngest of eight kids. And all my siblings are very crafty of, you know, they knit, they quilt, they do woodworking, they do, you know, sculpture. You know, there's craftiness and artwork throughout my whole family. And my mom crocheted and my dad crocheted. And, you know, it was just natural that I was, you know, ready to learn to crochet when I was very, very little. So when I was 5, we were snowed in 1 year, and my mom gave me a hook and a ball of yarn. And I just took to it. There was something about crochet that just fascinated me. You know, you could take this ball of yarn and turn it into something just by, you know, tying knots with a hook. It just fascinated me. And so I spent my entire life growing up doing, you know, crocheting mainly other people's patterns, of course, out of magazines and my mom's books. And then I went off to college. And in college, I studied fine art. So I was a painter, an oil painter, essentially. And as I tried to support myself as a painter, as time went on, you know, I was hungry because oil painters starve, unless you get lucky, because I was painting pet portraits for a while. And I would be in my studio for days on end and never talk to anybody because I would be so engrossed in the painting, and my studio's in my house. And, you know, and people would hire me over the internet. So it's not like I ever really talked to anyone. So I got a little stir crazy. But then when I started getting my crochet designs published, I felt so lucky to be exposed and introduced into this industry where everyone's so welcoming. You know, I joined the Crochet Guild of America. I was crocheting for charity. I joined some professional groups like the National Needle Arts Association, and everybody was so welcoming. I mean, they're all like, "Who are you? You know, where'd you come from? You know, what's going on?" But when they saw that I was fairly normal, they were all very welcoming and said, "Hey, let me introduce you to people, and we're so glad you're here." And then, so I got to talk to people, which was really, really nice. And that became very exciting because as I got designs published and started to kind of make my way in the industry, I realized that, you know, there's a lot to be said for 3D people. You know, they're a lot of fun, you know, to actually interact with people. And when you go to these events, like when I go to events like a trade show event or the Crochet Guild of America events, everybody's so, they want to hug you. They're all hugging each other. It's like you have known everybody your entire lives. It's such a wonderful vibe in the knit and crochet world. And so, yeah, so I started getting stuff published. I worked for yarn companies at first, you know, where they put out those patterns that are in their leaflets or they're on the ball bands or sometimes in advertising. You know, they hire a lot of designers to produce the pattern support for their yarns. And so I got a lot of work that way, which was great because I really honed my skills, learned what I was good at, learned what interested me as far as design goes, because I design both knit and crochet. And then I started getting book deals to where books started coming out that I did all the designs for. And then, you know, that's when it takes over, when you can actually put your sensibility. You're discovering your sensibility as a designer at that point. So I started to see what represented me in the design world, in the crochet and knit design world. And that was very exciting. And then, before you know it, I had hooked up with Candy Jensen of Candy Jensen Productions. And she puts out this little PBS show that's in 80 million homes a week. And because it's not so little, the host of her show is Brett Barra, and she has crochet and knit experts. And I was one of the crochet experts on her show for 5 years, for 5 seasons. So that was really, really exciting because I discovered I loved, you know, the excitement of being on camera. I'm a very good teacher. Teaching is a big part of my life. Everywhere I go, I seem to be teaching somebody something. And so being able to teach on a national level, what I love with crochet and knit, that it was a really exciting, pivotal moment in my life when I had this platform. And then what I discovered is I could also teach at, you know, exciting events like Stitches, and where there are all these eager students that just want to learn. And so then I started spreading my wings and teaching more often. And then before you know it, the nice people at Boy Brand Hooks got a hold of me and said, hey, you know, you seem to have your boots on the ground in the crochet world. How would you like to help us develop crochet products? And you can put it under the brand, The Crochet Dude. And so that's how the Crochet Dude line of products started, is I would go to their headquarters and work with their product development team and say, you know what, crocheters need this. We need this, and it's not out there. And we would work together to bring products to the table that, well, to be honest, it's kind of selfish because they were really all for me, because it's, as a crocheter, this is what I want. I mean, I want this. And so, but I know that because I'm exposed through Facebook and Crochetville and the online forums, that I know in general what all the crocheters are longing for. It's the same thing I'm longing for. So then my products came out and they got really good distribution from the start. They're in all of the Michaels, and they're in like Joann's, Beverly Fabrics, Walmart picked up some of the products. So these products that I really, really wanted to bring to the average crocheter now are available worldwide, and that's extremely exciting. And that's where I'm at today. So I got the products and the books and the designs. Oh, well, yeah. So I started a little yarn company. It was so funny because it was Labor Day, not last year, the year before. I was outside and I was flipping burgers, you know, drinking a beer because it was Labor Day. And I thought, what would make my life easier? I'll start a yarn company. So I started a yarn company and got in cahoots with yarn suppliers and dyers. And before you know it, Drew Imborski Yarn was born. And now I have, you know, four different yarns in my yarn with like 47 colors, I believe. And all that's on my website, drewimborski.com, if you want to see the colors and stuff. So now that's where I'm at. I have the yarn going too.
Okay, well, you've given us a fairly broad, far-reaching span of your career so far, Drew. And I think maybe the best thing we can do is to step back and look at some of the pieces here and really talk about them. And so I think the best place to start is with your line of products, your wildly successful line of Crochet Dude products. And, of course, you worked with the good folks over at Boy to develop those. And they're smart. I mean, they were smart early on. They got together with you, and it wasn't just about branding. It was about, you know, hey, Drew, we need to develop these things together. And you've come out with such great, like, the Ergo hooks. What I have been with you when people have come up to you and said, I couldn't crochet until I found your Ergo hook. It must be very gratifying to know that not only is your face and your brand on a product, but it's on a product that you helped develop and that you feel good about.
Extremely gratifying, because I get those emails maybe every other day. Somebody says something somewhere to the effect of, I couldn't learn to crochet until I got the Ergo hooks because the hooks were too small. Or I've been crocheting for 40 years, and because of the, the repetitive stress, I had to put it down. My doctor wouldn't let me crochet anymore. But when I picked up one of your Ergo hooks, I realized I could crochet again. And, you know, everything in between there. And it is very satisfying, because honestly, bringing those products like the Ergo hooks or the bent end yarn needles or whatever it is in my line that is making people's crochet experience better, really, I'm bringing all that to the table for that. It's not to see the caricature of my face on products at Walmart. That's a wonderful bonus that I'm so grateful for, but it isn't what drives me. What drives me are the people when I'm on the show floor at Stitches or in a Facebook thread or something. It's those people saying to me, you know what, because of your products, my crochet experience is better, or it's, I've been able to come back to it after not being able to crochet anymore. That's what drives me. And that's what continues to drive me as I work on, you know, developing more products. It needs to touch people on an emotional level. It needs to make their experience better, or it's not worth it to me.
Well, I understand that that's how you feel about it. But again, it is such a successful brand. I was up on, I believe it was Walmart.com, and saw that every single one, I mean, if you go into, a smaller Michaels or a Joann's, you don't always see all of your tools. But I was up on Walmart.com, and every single one of your tools is up there. And that's a lot of stock and, a lot of attention that they've given to your tools. And I think rightly so. Obviously, they understand that you understand.
Yeah, there are 55 products on Walmart.com now, and they range from, stitch markers all the way up to the ergo hooks and everything in between. Yeah, they're that says a lot for anybody to say to look at a product line so big, which 55 products is quite big, and to say, yes, we want to carry it all because it all makes sense. We understand that what you're doing is important. So yeah, it's extremely exciting to see all the products in one place like that.
Now, of course, this makes total sense to me. You have a lot of natural charisma. You and I have known each other for a good long time, and I think it's safe to say that we are good friends. But I've also seen you out in the world, up on stage, in front of classrooms, of course, on television. You have that wonderful charisma and a way of making people feel like you're engaging them. And I think that they find that very empowering, and they can take away that experience of, yes, I can.
I think that's something that is not to say it's my superpower, but I think that's something I recognized when I very first started to teach. I used to live in Mexico in my 20s, and I was an English teacher there. And that was the first time I actually taught full time. And I realized that when you can see that the other person can do something, even before they see it, they eventually can do it. But you can validate, I can validate in people what they don't see in themselves yet, and it's a very natural thing. And I do that, like you've listed out, whether I'm on stage or I'm in a classroom or I'm just talking to you, in a coffee shop. If there's something you want to do and I can see it in you, then I have the confidence you're going to be able to do it. And I hope, and what you're saying, it might be true. I hope others can feel that. Because if you really want to do something, you should do it. You should feel confident to do it. That seeing the good in others and seeing the abilities in others, that sometimes I wonder, I think that might be like my life purpose because it doesn't matter what situation I'm in, whether it's a personal situation or a professional one, that's what I seem to naturally come back to. That's my baseline is I know you can do this. I can see it.
You are good at that. And one of the things that I think was really astounding to me when you were first doing the Stitches teaching tour, again with us for a good number of shows in a row, you obviously spoke to the crocheters that were coming, which, not a huge number of crocheters come to a Stitches show. They're gaining ground all the time. But your classes were consistently selling to knitters who wanted to learn how to crochet because they felt safe and they felt like it was going to be interesting. And that's kind of a big thing. I mean, that's kind of a new thing that I'm seeing out there. More and more knitters feeling like, yes, I want to learn how to crochet.
Well, right from the start, when I started in the industry in 2005, that's when I really started to expose myself. The online groups were getting big. Ravelry wasn't even out yet. But right from the start, I never ever bought into the whole division between knitters and crocheters ever, because we knit and crochet in my family. We there was no it was they're two different crafts. They both use yarn, but there's no reason to. For me, there was no reason to see that division. And so as knitters have kind of poked their heads around the corner going, I might want to pick up the hook. It's like, come on in. Come on. There's room for everybody. I appreciate anybody's desire to improve their skill set. I don't care where they came from or what they do, because I knit and I crochet and I cross stitch and do woodworking. I mean, I do everything also. So I think people can feel that. They can feel that they can trust the teacher's not going to judge them for being a knitter first, because I don't judge anybody for anything. So I think that's why that atmosphere in the class was very quickly established at the Stitches.
Well, and I think if you look at some of the best teachers and designers in the industry, whether you're talking about a Myra Wood or a Kristen Omdahl or a Marley Bird, they would all agree with you that that whole knit versus crochet thing is just, it's a figment of somebody else's imagination.
Right. It was just a reason to revisit high school for a while for some people. You know, that's all it was.
You were very successful early on with, appearing on television and doing workshops and being known as the crochet dude. And part of that success comes from your the books that you've written. And I'd kind of like to go through the books you've written because, there's some great books there that have done some good things. There's a charity book and there's a how-to book. Do you want to talk about your books for a little bit?
Sure, yes. When I first started getting the opportunity to be published, I have always taken the approach that this could be my last book. This could be my only book. When my very first book contract was signed, which was for the Crochet Dudes Designs for Guys, I just told myself, this could be it. This could be my one shot. So, since it is a shot and this will be published, give it all you got. You know, pull out all your guns and all your tips and your tricks, get it all into this one book, because this could be the now I have 9 books published, but every book that I do, I bring that same attitude. This could be the last one. So everything needs to get into this book. And I think that that has led to some really exciting, let's say, explorations in what I'm doing. So when I started with Designs for Guys, I thought, you know, here's my, everybody out there is saying there aren't enough Designs for Guys. So here's my chance to bring to the industry, bring to the consumer, bring to my colleagues a book of Designs for Men that you can crochet that people will actually want to wear. This, the, you know, I approached it with the attitude that I have a shot to make a difference. Nobody can ever say there aren't designs out there for guys again if I do this right. And so I think I brought out a book of designs that are very wearable. People love them. The guys love them. I see pictures of guys wearing their stuff all the time that they've made or the ladies in their life have made for them. And they look great, they feel great, and they have a better attitude towards crochet now because of it. And then my next book that came out, which is a large book too, was Ladies Designs. And I thought, gosh, you know, I have one shot at this. So I'm going to pull out all the stops. And so this lady's wearables and crochet, you know, there's a little black dress, there's a strapless bustier party dress. I mean, I just, there's cabling, there's beading, there's faux fur cuffs. I mean, I just went for it because I thought this is my only shot. And it was funny because my editor later revealed that when I submitted the drawings for the book, her and her team looked at the drawings because I was going, look, if we're going to do it, let's do it. So the designs were kind of fashion forward and stuff she had never seen in crochet before. And they thought, well, he's probably not going to be able to do it, but let's give him a shot. You know, whatever he turns in, you know, we'll make the best of it. So when I turned it in, they recategorized the book from being a technique book to being one of their fashion books. And they moved it up in priority because they saw that, you know what, I put everything in it. I put everything I had in, all my techniques, all my sensibilities. I devoted my whole life to that book. And you know, a lot of people, a lot of designers, and I don't judge them for this, but a lot of designers, in order to do volume, they farm out the actual stitching. They'll do the design and a swatch, and then they'll send it to a stitcher who stitches it for them. And I've done it too many, many times. But when it came to Designs for Guys and Crochet It, Love It, Wear It, which is the ladies' book, it's like I need to micromanage this book. I want to put every stitch that's in this book myself because it could be my last book and it needs to be perfect. It needs to be exactly the way I envision it. And so those two books have been very exciting for me because I feel like I accomplished something big with both of them.
I understand that you had a way of approaching this so that there were other male sensibilities along the way. And I think it's kind of a fun story. Would you mind telling that to our listeners?
Absolutely. What I did was I, when I was getting ready to do the actual proposal of all the different sweaters that would make it into the book, I did a bunch of sketches. I mean, a bunch of them. I mean, there were, you know, for the book that ended up with like, I think 18 designs, I must have done 40 or 45 sketches of different sweaters. And I had a, I had kind of a little party, and I had all these frat boys come over. Well, ex-frat boys, but they still had the spirit of frat boy in them. They're all professionals now, but so they all came over and I gave them some beer and we were having fun, and they knew what was going to happen. I brought out all these designs, and once we were having a really good time, I said, okay, you have to help me whittle this down. What if you see something you would refuse to wear, no matter how expensive it was or who gave it to you, you would refuse to wear it, pull that from the table. And they were more than happy to do that. It was like a bloodbath. They took out stuff that I was even surprised they took out. But once they took it out and they told me why, I looked at it, I was like, you're right. That's not something a guy would want to wear. That's something that would be fun to make. Or maybe you'll see it at the store, but it's not something a guy would really choose to wear. And I was able to whittle down the sweaters down to, I think we got it down to 25. And then the editor and I whittled it more. But about 25 of them that I knew that a group of frat boys would actually, you know, say, yeah, I would wear that. Absolutely. Not in Houston. It's a little warm. But if I lived up north, I would wear that. That was probably the best thing I could have done, the best market research I could have done, because it was important to me that what ended up in the book was based on what guys would wear.
Being able to step outside yourself is an important thing that the best designers are able to do.
Well, thank you.
So anyway, let's move on with your next book.
Yeah, the books after that, what happened was then we decided we needed to do a series of little project books. So I came out with four little books that, you know, they have like 10 projects that are very specific. So there's like a hat book, and there's a purse book, and there's a pet book, and then there's also a dishcloth book. And that has just right to the point, fun projects. I was able to bring my design sensibility to it. The hat book was really fun because the deadline for the hat book just happened to coincide when I was going to go to a little designer retreat at Vashti Braha's place in Florida. So I'm at Vashti's house and we're like driving to yarn shops, and the whole time I'm designing the hats as we're going around town, or we're sitting around having, you know, drinks and talking about, you know, designers' problems and the fun of being a designer and all that. So every time I look at that book, I think, oh, I love Vashti so much. This hat, I was in her car when I did this hat, or I was by her pool when I did that one. So the hat book's very special to me because of that. So I did those four, and those came out, and one went into Walmart. Most of them went into Michael's, so you can still see them out there free range. And then after that, the book I got really excited about is a book called Hug It Out. Now, Hug It Out is a book if you want to crochet for charity. And a lot of people know that before I actually became a professional crocheter, my mom had passed away. And I was grieving really, really hard. I was young. I was only 30, I think 31 when she passed away. So I was really grieving really hard. And I started crocheting for charity just to keep myself busy. I just needed something to keep my hands busy. And what I didn't realize is that when you go through the process of making something that's not for you, you're just going to give it away to some anonymous person who's in pain or is sad or is suffering on some level. You know, you're going to try to comfort them with your crochet. Something very special happens. You all of a sudden get outside yourself a little bit. And so I was getting outside myself quite a bit. And then couple that with the fact that every time I crochet, I thought about my mom in a positive way. Instead of thinking about the end of life issues that were just haunting me, you know, I didn't want to see that anymore. I had 30 good years with her of happy memories. I didn't want to see the ugly anymore. And as I crocheted, I would think about, oh, do you remember when that one year that all her grandkids got crocheted animals and they all thought she did it, but she was too slow and Uncle Drew did them all, but they never knew, you know. you know, these funny little anecdotes would pop into my head while I was crocheting for charity. And before you know it, a sense of well-being came back to me and my whole life. It, you know, the gloom lifted. I mean, obviously, I still cry sometimes when I think about missing my mom, you know, on Mother's Day or her birthday. But that sense of gloom that was like making me sit in the corner like a puddle, that lifted. And I think very, very, without question, I believe it's because of my crocheting for charity. And so crocheting for charity has become extremely important for me. And so when I came out with this book, it's called Hug It Out, I wanted to put out a book where others could find that joy of getting outside themselves and comforting others. And there are lots of different ways to do that. You can do comfort afghans, or you can do prayer shawls, or you can do maybe stuff for the SPCA. You know, there's lots of different things you can do. So this book I came out with has a project for each of those categories. And so you can crochet a prayer shawl, or you can crochet a little teddy bear that you can take down to your local police station and they can keep it in the car. And if they come across a child who's been in an accident or they're at a home for domestic abuse reasons, they can give this teddy bear to the child that's scared and they can feel some comfort while the situation's getting under control. And so I have lots of different projects like that in the book. There's also some projects that you could sell at like a church bazaar so that you could raise money, because sometimes you need to raise money for your, you know, not-for-profit group. So there are a lot of, that book is very important to me because it speaks so much to how much it helped me with my well-being. And I'm my obviously my desire is that it reaches out to as many people as possible to lift their spirits as well.
Besides the cathartic nature of the book, Hug It Out, and the concept of giving back, I know that this is something that's a big part of you all the time. For Fiber Hooligans that may have missed it, Drew's, of course, been also very involved with Halos of Hope for the past couple of years. And, you know, as a board member myself, it has been a pleasure to work with you. I think the first thing that we got going together was ending up getting our heads shaved, and you definitely steered the ship on that. And
I was the best looking one too when it was all set.
Well, that goes without saying. Here's the thing: Mark Morocco was with us, so I know I wasn't the worst looking. That's the thing that I and I'm sorry, Mark. I'm just kidding. But
he
you know,
like a poodle.
Oh, we won't go there. I'm not going to comment on that one. Yeah, but you have been involved, and your involvement has really skyrocketed the awareness of Halos of Hope. We've watched our Facebook page climb, and we've watched attention. You've been very responsible for the growth of Halos of Hope, and you've always been so generous. This is who you are, and it's because of this that you have now been the recipient of the Halos of Hope Man of the Year 2 years in a row. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings about working with Halos of Hope?
Well, it's interesting because the concept of knitting and crocheting for charity is not new. You know, it's been around since long before I even got involved in it. But when I first heard Pam Hashke, who's the president and founder of Halos of Hope, when I heard her talk, and she's a cancer survivor, and she started to talk about why she's doing it and who she touches with it, I looked at her and it was like looking at a kindred spirit. I looked at her and I was like, how have I not known you all my life? Because everything you're saying makes so much sense to me. I understand where you're coming from. And so being supportive of her Halos of Hope type campaigns where she's, you know, getting hats that are going to go to people that are having chemotherapy who have lost their hair to comfort them and to make them feel prettier or more handsome. Supporting that was a no-brainer. It was like, well, yeah, I'm on board with you. But when you talk to Pam, something magical happens, and it's hard to explain. And I think it's because it comes from such a deep understanding of how important her work is. She knows what she's doing. She's not doing it to fill her time. She's not doing it because it's the right thing to do to give back. She's doing it because this is what's driving her, is to comfort others. And when she starts talking about the numbers and about the number of children that she's sending hats to, you just, all you want to do is get on board and help her. So, yeah, I remember it was at Stitches South 2 years ago. You said, "Crochet dude, how would you like to get your head shaved?" And what's funny about that is everyone thought I would go, "Oh, no," as if I were like vain or something, because I'm not at all. It's like I used to shave my head when I was a kid anyway. But it was like, whatever you got. You had barely gotten the words out of your mouth. I said, "I'm on board. I shaved my head. Whatever it is, I'm there." And so as I got more and more involved with Halos of Hope and with Pam, I'm more and more committed to helping her. I have a page on my website dedicated to her where people can see a hat that I designed for her. And if you purchase the hat, just purchasing the one, my pattern for that one hat, will provide funds to Halos of Hope, enough funds to send out 19 hats to people that are undergoing chemotherapy. Just buying that one little pattern. It's amazing how little you have to do to touch so many lives.
Well, and as you know, it's so important. I mean, Halos of Hope's biggest expense is shipping. We're sending thousands and thousands of hats out every month.
It's like 3,000 really or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. And people have been great. Lots of knitters and crocheters send hats in all the time. When we're a little low, we have hat drives. And let's talk about one of the hat drives that happened, because last East, you, at the time, had a drive that was just yours. Mm-hmm. And by the time it was over, it was the single largest drive of its kind.
Which is amazing. I mean, the whole purpose of putting myself out there, tapping into my social media and anybody who's on my newsletter or whatever, tapping into those people and saying, "Send hats," was because at Stitches East the year before, I was honored with the Halos of Hope Man of the Year, for the fundraising drive we did with getting our heads shaved, which was unexpected. I went into the ugly cry. I couldn't even say thank you on stage because I did not expect that at all. It was the funniest thing. I was sitting there with one of my best friends from high school had come out to help in the booth. And we were sitting there and Pam was talking about who they were going to give this award to. And she said, "Oh, and the exposure that this person brought and blah, blah, blah." And I'm looking around and I said to my friend Angela, I said, "I wonder who it is. I wonder if it's Mark. I wonder if it's Benjamin." I was like trying to figure out who she was talking about. I had no idea she was talking about me. So when I received that award, I put it on my desk immediately and I stare at it every day because A, I didn't feel worthy because I didn't think I did enough. I always feel like I should be doing more, of course. There's always so much more we can do. So because of that, because I felt like, you know what? Did I really, really earn this award? Or did I just happen to rally people? You know, personally, do I feel worthy of this award? And I thought, well, whether or not I do, other people did feel I was worthy. But what I could do is, for this next Stitches East, which was last year, what I could do is I could honor Halos of Hope and thank Pam and the Halos of Hope for giving me this award by collecting hats, by doing everything I can to get hats made so that Halos of Hope can comfort more people. And so that was really the driving force behind that drive, was to say thank you to Pam and to say, I hope now, to myself, I've proven I'm worthy of this honor. And so people started sending in hats. It was the most amazing thing. I don't remember what month I started it, but my friend Michelle Muska, who works for Boy Needle Company, who manufactures my hooks, she lives just outside of Hartford. And so she said, absolutely, without hesitation, I will receive the hats. So if people want to ship them to my house, I will receive the hats. And the mailman at one point said to her, what is going on? Her husband was like, why is the garage full? Because I can't park my car in there anymore. Because all these hats from all over the world were being shipped in, and Michelle was receiving them, which was just a huge deal. But then Michelle said, guess what? We're going to go one step further. And Boy stepped up and said, we will ship those hats. You do not have to worry about shipping them. We will pay for all the shipping. We will take care of boxing them up and shipping them to the cancer centers, which was a huge deal because I've watched Pam at these shows. When it's done, she has to box them all up. She has to take them and ship them to the cancer centers. It's a lot of work for one or two people, and it's very expensive. So for Boy to step up and say, we'll ship them, that was just so amazing. I was just so grateful for it. So then Stitches East happened, and Michelle's house is full of hats, and people kept coming into the, you know, I had a booth on the market floor, and they kept bringing in hats and filling up. We had boxes full of hats. I was just blown away. I mean, I couldn't have been happier. And I'm sure Pam was happy because I think we got like 1,500 hats or something like that. And they all got shipped. So she didn't have to do it or have to, you know, Halos of Hope didn't have to incur those costs. I mean, it was just pretty darn amazing. I was so happy. There's a list of, if you want to see who donated hats, I put a list of the donors on my website on the Halos of Hope page so that people can see who all stepped up. Entire guilds got together to put together boxes of hats to ship in. It was just amazing.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that we give a big shout out to Michelle and the folks over at Boy for picking up that shipping expense. Shipping is Halos of Hope's biggest expense out there, and that was one time we didn't have to do the work or pay the bill. And so thanks a lot, folks.
Absolutely.
So, of course, you know, you continue to work with Halos of Hope. You continue to bring visibility to what we're doing, and I don't think that's over. My guess is that you're contacted all the time by knitters and crocheters that you work with or know you online and are always asking you, you know, how can they help?
Absolutely. They really do contact me regularly, and I just keep funneling them to the Halos of Hope website because all the information is there, how they can make a hat. There are hat patterns there. They can buy hat patterns to help raise money. There are the addresses of where they can send hats. You know, so all the information's on Halos of Hope website. I funnel them there. But it is a continuous, you know, fiber people are just givers at heart. They just want to help. They just want to bring comfort. They know how much comfort it brings them to make a hat or a comfort gown or a prayer shawl, and they want to provide that to other people. It's an amazing thing to watch.
Well, it's inspirational. I'd like to move off of this subject for a few minutes and move on to something Stitches related. When I had Stuart on my show about 2 weeks ago, Stuart from Prime Publishing, we talked a little bit about the ebooks that we do through Stitches, the best of the fashion show. Mm-hmm. And of course, not so long ago, the best of the Stitches West fashion show ebook came out, and of course you had a piece in it, mm-hmm. a beautiful piece, and it looks like it's been very popular and very well received. Can you kind of talk about that whole process, how that worked, and what the response has been so far?
Well, I think it's really a brilliant thing that that the Prime Publishing and you guys came up with here, because, you know, not everyone can get to Stitches. That's just a fact. There are four of them. We all want to go, but we just can't all make it. However, by coming out with these electronic books that show the best of the fashion show, and it's free, it's kind of a way that people all over the world can kind of see what it's like to be there and get the patterns and experience it vicariously to an extent, but at least it touches more people, and I love that. I love when things are brought out so the most people can get to it as possible. The shawlette that I put into it, it's a one hank project. It's actually quite easy. It's not a difficult, it looks lacy, but the stitch pattern is actually, anyone could do it if they'd like. It made it on the cover of the ebook, which is really, really cool because the lady that modeled for me, her name is Ellie, and she's a friend of a friend, and she's only in Houston a couple times a year because she has a home in New Zealand, and she's, I think she just turned 64 years old. She's so beautiful, and has such a beautiful spirit. I looked at her one day and I said, look, you need to model for me. You need to model my stuff. Your spirit and you're so beautiful inside and out. And she was like, oh, I've never done anything like that. And I tell you what, I threw that shawl on her and she just lit up. The camera loved her. It's like, you know, I know you're 64, but you need to start a new career as a model because look at you. But it's because that spirit is just so beautiful and it just shines through. And the shawls, you know, of course, look really good on her. But that shawl is easy. It only takes one hank of my Gemstones yarn. And the reason why with my patterns, I'm not saying my patterns are never difficult because, of course, I push the boundary of technique and all that. But the way I write patterns, I don't ever want them to be tricky. I don't want them to be so that, you know, any average stitcher can't do it. So even if you're an advanced beginner, you can knit and you can purl. You can sit down with that pattern and work through it slowly and you'll be able to do it. And the results will look much more advanced than maybe your skill set actually is. And that's important to me that everybody can make my patterns.
And I know that you have that accessibility thing that you are always striving for. And so the pattern is available, of course, for free on, I think it's allfreeknitting.com and allfreecrochet.com, where Correct. We're living right now, the Stitches West ebook. And so they can go get the pattern for free. And, of course, they can always come to your website, drewimborski.com, and then get the yarn so they Correct. Can kit it up themselves. Let's talk about your yarn.
Okay.
So this has been, in just the last couple of years, you have decided that there wasn't nearly enough going on in your life. And right. so you just started to start your own yarn company. And the way that you've done it, I think, is interesting. And your selection of colors, the reason for the selection of colors is a good story. And I'd like you to talk to us a little bit about that philosophy, about not chasing the what's now.
Sure. I mean, as would be expected, I've been approached by big yarn companies to license my name to have yarns with bigger yarn companies. And I've always kind of, this voice in the back of my head hesitated. And so I never really pursued it any further than thank you for the offer, but it's not the best time right now because there's something about big yarn companies that I understand and respect, but it makes me a little uncomfortable in that they're under a lot of pressure to stay on trend. And so they're watching, like, you know, Fashion Week or the Pantone color forecast to see what the colors of 2015 are going to be. And then once they see what they're going to be, they, you know, have to put together a new fresh color palette that will go along with that and come out in 2015. But what they have to do is they have to discontinue colors to make room for it. And my experience when I was working in the crocheting for charity a lot, and then as a designer, is that all my favorite colors were getting discontinued, you know, regularly because they're under a lot of pressure and I understand that. And so I never wanted to affiliate with that type of pressure. I didn't want to discontinue colors I loved. And when you're, you know, when you're a licensed brand, they have a lot of power, you know, it's their company that you're kind of being invited to play in. So when that idea came to me when I was flipping burgers on Labor Day that I should have a yarn company, the reason why it sounded like a good idea is the very first thing I thought was, I don't have to ever discontinue colors. I can come up with colors that I love and that the people that make my patterns love, and we don't have to discontinue them. That was the very first thought that came into my head. And as I started to explore that, I realized, you know what? Since it is my own yarn company, I could bring back the colors that I loved. You know, and then I stewed on that for a while. And then the concept that I came up with that you're talking about is, I named my first colorway Decades, and the Decades represents all these colors from our past that we love so much. And so I came up with 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s as the decades that I would work with at first. And within each of those decades, I have five quintessential colors from those decades. So I did a lot of research. You know, I was all over Pinterest. I was all over the internet trying to find out what those quintessential colors were. It was interesting. There's a rhythm to the decades. If you look at the 50s are kind of muted, and then the 60s are kind of bright, and then the 70s are kind of muted, and then the 80s could be kind of bright. There's like this rhythm to the decades, which provides a nice balance to my palette. But so I came out with these quintessential colors, and what I hoped would happen and what I've seen happen is that they evoke an emotional response. I mean, when you look at those colors from the 60s or the 50s and you go, wow, I remember that dress my mom made when I was 5 years old. It was this color and it was my favorite dress. Or my grandmother's wallpaper had all those colors in it. Or, you know, the shag carpet in our house, which was a foot deep and we had to rake, was that color. It was that green or it was that gold. That deep down response is what I'm looking for. And so that's what I came up with. And what was the fun part of it all was naming the colors, because within each decade, there are quintessential phrases, you know, there are catchphrases that go along with it. So in the 60s, the yellow is called banana seat and the blue is called leisure suit and the green's called bad trip. Then when you get into the 50s, it's like a TV dinner, which is green, because for some reason, I remember TV dinners being green. And there's like blue suede shoes. In the 70s, there's shag carpet and fondue and convoy. So all through the decades, there are all these fun things. I'm thinking about doing a series of blog post entries where I kind of flesh out why each of those colors were important to me. And that's why they're in the palette, and then why I named them what I named them. So look forward to that in the next month or so. I'm going to start that series.
And as I look at this as an approach, I just think it's very cool. It's very different. You're not chasing the trendy. You're not chasing the new. Instead, what you're doing is inviting us to go back in time and remember those colors that are a part of our lives that we can fall in love with again. The nostalgia factor is huge. I remember not liking some of those colors at different points in my life, but now when I look at them, it means something else, right? You know?
I spent the entire 80s of my life, because I was a teenager in the 80s. I spent the entire decade of the 80s mocking the 70s. I mocked their disco and their bell bottoms and their shag carpet. And then once we designed these colors and I was looking at it in yarn, I looked at the 70s and went, look how pretty they are. No wonder people loved it. No wonder they're so rich. They're so beautiful. I remember those colors so well. So I don't mock them anymore. I celebrate them.
I would absolutely agree. Not only are they sort of quintessential colors from those decades, but they're your sensibility about those quintessentials colors in those decades, and I think that's going to continue to resonate with people. So while we're talking about your yarns, I want to say three words and have you react to them. Iconic, sarcastic, and inappropriate.
Well, it sounds like you're calling me names. And actually, what's funny about that is those are things that I've been called. And so when I needed to name the different fibers, like I have a worsted weight superwash merino, I have a sport weight superwash merino nylon blend, and I have a DK weight cotton tencel blend. Well, I needed to name those so I could put it on the label. And so I was sitting there, and it's, you know, the yarn's Drew and Borski. So I thought, what would be a natural thing? Drew and Borski, fill in the blank. So I thought, well, I should put things that people have called me, because it'd be like Drew and Borski, inappropriate, or Drew Borski, sarcastic, which I've been called a lot. I mean, in college, my teachers are always, Drew, that's just so inappropriate. Sorry, but you know. But then the iconic one, of course, that a gentleman named Benjamin Levesay said it once. He said, you know, iconic crocheter Drew Borski, and I just latched onto that. It's like, once one person calls you that, you don't let go. No one's ever called me that since, but...
And so what we have here is these great decades of yarn in these three great fibers. And the end result is that anybody working or even researching your fibers, it's just fun.
Why else do it? You know, if it ain't fun, don't do it. You know, and no, it needed to represent me. You know, that's the thing. It's like I could have licensed with a big yarn company and it would have been their business model and everything. But since it's just me, you know, this is my vision. It's like, well, I'm fun. I like to have fun. So let's make it fun. Let's make the names fun. Let's make the colors fun. And let's just have a really enjoyable experience. And you know what? Those colors aren't going to get discontinued. So if you fall in love with shag carpet, it's going to be here for a while.
So you came out with a different colorway, again, speaking beyond just chasing the trend. And I love it. Did you want to talk to us about gemstones?
My next colorway that I came out with, I called it gemstones. And each of the colors is one of the birthstone colors. Again, this harkens back to my need that whatever yarn I'm putting out, it needs to talk to you on a different level than just, oh, it's pretty. Everyone loves their own birthstone. It's so personal. It represents your uniqueness. And so I wanted to come out with these. So I came out with gemstones, which is a sport weight superwash merino nylon blend. And a hang cast 440 yards, which is enough for a pair of socks if you're knitting them. And you can get your birthstone color, which you're August, right? So you're Peridot, which is kind of a sagey green. I'm July, which if anyone knew anything about Cancers and Leos, we shouldn't even be friends. But
I know.
Somehow we put up with each other. So mine's ruby, which is just this luscious, rich ruby. And all my colors are, I call them semi-solids. They're kind of a mottled, you know, they're not just, they don't look like they're chemically dyed, you know, they're hand dyed yarn. So there's a lot of variation within the red. So you get a real rich effect from it. I love the gemstones because they're such saturated jewel tone colors. I just love them.
I think the one that really speaks to me, and again, you're not supposed to ever wear this if it's not your birthstone because it's the biggest, you know, taboo. You have opal, and the concept of, you know, putting opal into yarn, because there's, you know, like pinky and greenish flecks in that, seems kind of problematic, and yet I think your opal is amazingly, looks very much like opal.
Yeah, it's funny because I call the nice lady Nancy who does my dyeing for me, I call her the yarn whisperer because she just has this, she's at one with the yarn and she's at one with the dye. She just, because I was explaining to her, you know, opal, it's kind of this kind of a creamy color, but there's like little kisses of peach and mint green in it. And she looked at me and she looked up in the air. She said, I'll be right back. She came back like 10 minutes later with a hank of yarn that looked like opal. I was like, how did you do that? It was on her first, you know, her first pass. It came out perfect. It was just absolutely unbelievable.
Well, it's good that you've got somebody that can help, you know, actualize your vision on that. I think one of the things that I really love about your website, and by the way, folks, you can get all this yarn up on drewimborski.com. One of the things I love about the way that you display this yarn on your website is that you don't put pictures of hanks of yarn up there. Instead, what you do is you put pictures of your yarn being knit up and crochet up so people can actually see how it knits or crochets up as a way of looking at the yarn itself, which I don't think I've seen before.
Well, it's really important because as both a knitter and a crocheter, I know yarn looks different. It looks completely different if you knit it or you crochet it. They're two different crafts. They just happen to both use yarn. So it's important to me that for every color that I have up there, I have a knit swatch and a crochet swatch side by side. So you can see how it's going to turn out. That way you can expect how it's going to turn out and not be unpleasantly surprised, because you might think it's one way, but it's really the other way. So that's why I have both of them up there.
I just think it's really smart, and I think it's a good reminder for people to know that, you know, this yarn can be used in more than one way. Of course, your biggest audience, I would imagine, would be crocheters. But you and I have been on the Stitches floor together, where I was standing in the aisle to sort of talking to you, and you were sort of manning your booth with your sisters. And somebody came in and picked up a hank of your yarn and said, can you also knit with this, or is this just for crochet? And you were great. I think you looked at her and I think you said something like, oh no, that's just crochet. If you're a knitter, you know, you need to probably get out of the booth or something like that. You said something like that, and she was stunned. And of course, I'm just kidding. But I think that there is a perception sometimes that you know, something is only for one thing.
Right. And you know what that may stem from is, do you remember, I don't know, a few years ago, they came out with that yarn that would like pattern. So if you knit socks, it would make it look Fair Isle by itself, you know, and it was like computer printed yarn that would create a pattern. When you can only knit with that yarn, you know, it was patterned for knitting. So when you crocheted with it, it looked all goofy. So there is a chance that maybe, you know, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt, that there are some yarns that really, truly are only made for knitting because of the patterning effect that they intended with the yarn. But when it comes to a good basic yarn, you know, people can knit with it, they can crochet with it. You know, weaving is getting really popular. My yarns look beautiful, you know, on that Zoom loom that everyone's doing. So, yeah, a good basic yarn, you can use it for anything.
Just wanted to make sure that we threw that out because it was such a great story. I love being on there. You know, there have been some moments on the Stitches floor where I was certainly glad to be there with you. There's been some nice sort of sentimental halos of hope moments on the floor that I was there with you. I've been there to see people react so positively to your yarn at Stitches before. I was fortunate enough to be on the market floor. I wasn't with you, but I was across the aisle when you found out that your yarn had made the cover of Knitters Magazine.
That was a big deal. That was a big deal because your staff, which apparently take after you, they kept it so concealed from me. Because I ordered extra yarn. I knew my yarn was going to be in a sweater in your magazine. I just knew that in advance because you have to make sure all the technicals are correct and stuff. So that wasn't a surprise. So I had extra of the colors. We used 90s colors that month. But normally, there are posters of the cover of the new issue everywhere you go. And I, of course, was so busy setting up, I didn't really notice there weren't any. But your whole staff made sure I didn't know it was on the cover. And then I think it was Jason who works with you. He said, Drew, can you come help me lift some boxes? I was like, oh, sure. Oh, I can help, sure. So I came over and we opened one of the box out and he pulled out that issue with a sweater that Rick Mondragon had designed with my 90s colors. All five colors were in it, and it was on the cover of the magazine. I almost fell down. I was just so surprised. It's such a beautiful sweater, and getting on the cover of a lot of people don't realize getting on the cover of a knitting or a crochet magazine. It's a big deal because it's not easy. There's so many little tiny things that have to align. You know, the model has to be looking at the camera. The project has to be engaging because this is what's on the newsstand. So many things have to happen that just to get on the cover of any magazine is practically a miracle. So when I saw it, I was just like, I could barely even talk. I mean, that whole show, I was flying high. Because it was like, ah. So, you know, and others were like, I only got on it once in the last 40 years. And this was my first time in the magazine, and I got on the cover. It's like, honest, I had nothing to do. You can't bribe people to be on the cover. I've tried.
Well, and it is kind of funny because you and I both have a friend that has a fairly old yarn company in the United States who has been advertising with Knitters Magazine for like 30 years, who just recently got on the cover for the first time, and here it was, your first time out, and you got in the cover.
I appreciated the spirit in which your staff made sure it was a complete surprise for me, because I love surprises. And it just made that whole show magical. I was just flying high the whole show.
It was a fun piece, too. It was a kind of a cool hoodie thing with all of these great colors. Very young-looking piece.
Yeah. It's very artsy-looking, you know, and like wearable art. It's beautiful because he used all five of the colors from the 90s, and they're all these rich Tuscan colors. And there's also the sixth one in the 90s is all five of those colors twisted into one hank, you know, so you get like a multi. And he made a hoodie that goes with this like raglan sweater that uses all the colors, like color blocking. It was an amazing design.
Yeah, Rick did a nice job with that piece, and it was just a fun show. Just a lot of energy. It was really great to just be there with you during that show. So let's move off this for right now. One of the big announcements that I think that we have to let the Fiber Hooligans know about is you are a brand new Craftsy.com teacher.
I got the call, Benjamin. I got the call. Somebody from Craftsy called me in, I don't know, January and said, do you want to teach? You want to do a class for Craftsy? And I was like, I've been waiting for years for this call. like, where were you when you got the call? I love the whole concept of Craftsy, which is this online, they're online classes that you enroll in and you watch like the top teachers of all the different, they have like cake decorating and gardening and quilting and knitting and crochet. And when you buy the class, you have this class forever and you can watch the video class over and over again. You can ask questions and you can, I mean, you really can sit, there's like this little button you push on the screen and it replays the last 30 seconds. And you can push it over and over and over until you get that technique down. Just the whole platform of Craftsy, I support. Because it doesn't matter where you live. You can be in a little tiny town out in the middle of nowhere. And you can take the same class as somebody who lives in a big city. And has, you know, teachers available to them. So that's really wonderful. So when they contacted me, I was like, you know, I held the phone away from my head for 5 seconds and counted. And then I said, yes, please. So I worked with, they're such an amazing group there. They've crossed all their T's and dotted all their I's. So I worked with an acquisitions editor and we went through the project and the techniques and what would be best. And then I worked with a producer and we finished up, you know, what we were going to put into the class. I made an Afghan. It's called the class is called Amazing Crochet Texture. And it's a free class, which is fun. They have a whole series of free classes to kind of introduce you to the platform. And also you learn some stuff. So this Amazing Crochet Texture class, you end up making an Afghan that has all these different texture techniques, including adding beads as you go. You don't have to pre-string them, which a lot of people don't realize. You don't have to put 500 beads on the yarn before you start the project anymore. You can actually add them when you need them, which is, you know, saves a lot of hassle and you can get to the fun stuff right away. So when you take the class, you learn all these techniques, you end up with an Afghan. And I just think the experience from the point of view of a teacher and somebody who's been on camera, they are just so professional and they're just so eager to make sure what they're providing the students is the very, very best it can be.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of the Craftsy folks. And I've had many guests on the show who have done Craftsy classes. And again, they all rave about the experience. But the more important, and I think you'd agree with me, is the experience for the end user. And, you know, Craftsy just does not put out schlock. I mean, I happen to know that if it's not good, they'll dump it, even right. if they put money into it. And yours is definitely not schlock. It is enjoying a phenomenal amount of success, you know, even for, and I'm not qualifying it in any way, for a free download class. I mean, it is being downloaded like crazy. What do your numbers look like so far?
I looked at that this morning when I got up. It's at about, I think I saw 5,300 students had enrolled in it. And it's only been out for a couple of days.
That's just amazing.
The feedback has been just it's gratifying. It makes me glow from the inside because people are saying exactly what a teacher wants to hear. They're saying, Drew, I've tried to learn that technique. I've been crocheting for years and all I had to do is watch your class once and I got it. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's exactly why teachers teach. You want people to be empowered and to have skills. So it's been great getting the feedback already. And it's only been a few days since it's come out. So I'm just hoping hundreds of thousands of people take it.
Well, I think you're well on your way. And again, let's remind our listeners, if they want to take your free class, where do they go and how do they take it?
They'll sign up for Craftsy. You can go to craftsy.com. If you happen to not be able to find it on Craftsy because you have to navigate through the different classes, I do have it on the front page of my website. So if you go to drewimborski.com, there's a Craftsy logo and you can click it. It'll take you right to my class. So whichever way is easier. And then once you sign up, You enroll in the class, and then the videos are available. They give you a little tutorial on how to use the videos and, you know, what to expect from the class, and then you just jump right in. You can see there's a discussion thread where people are talking about it, so you get to type in your questions or answer other people's questions. Then you also, there's a place where you can put all your projects. So people are posting their projects. As they're finishing each Afghan square, they're posting that.
Oh, it's very exciting, and it's very cool. And I'm hoping that there'll be more classes in the future from you on Craftsy.
Oh, I hope so too. Oh, absolutely. You know, that'd be great.
I think it would be good for everybody. So let's move on. As you know, I've tied you up for a good long time here, and I don't want to keep you all day. So what else are you working on these days that we should know about?
What am I working on? Well, what I'm, like, in typical designer fashion, I'm going to say, I can't talk about that, Benjamin. But what I can say is, coming up in next year, 2015, it's my 10-year anniversary of blogging. You know, all of this insanity started when I started my blog, The Crochet Dude. And so I really want to celebrate 10 years of the blog. So I'm kind of face down in a big celebration project that will come out early next year. I'm not sure the date, you know, because that is pretty far off. But it's taking all my creative energy focused on that to put together what I hope is a celebration of crochet in today's world. You know, I think it's going to be great. I'm very excited about it.
So we won't press you for an answer on that, but maybe we could press you to agree to come back in the new year and when it sits out and tell us all about it in person.
I'll come back sooner. You can't stop me.
Again, it's just amazing, given the fact that, you know, I was born in August and you were born in July, that we're friends at all. You know?
Yeah, because it's very, very difficult. A Leo and a Cancer.
And you're talking about me when you're saying it's very difficult.
It takes a lot of my energy.
Oh, that's good. All right, final question, and I always warn all my guests, and you know, you're not a stranger to the show, so here it is. Do you have any final last words that you'd like to impart to the Fiber Hooligan listeners today?
Final last words. That question always catches me off guard, and I always know it's coming. Something I've been thinking about recently is how important it is to do something every day that puts you into a state of joy and happiness. If you can do just one thing every day that just gets you into that state of joy, like you were, you know, when you were a little kid, you could just get that euphoric state of joy, then joyful things start to pop up around you. You can see them. Because I think we all have goodness swirling around us, and we can see it when we can get into that state of joy. So just make that effort. Just 5 minutes a day, be happy.
I think that's great advice. And I want to thank you for being so kind and generous with your time. It's great to have you back on the show. And I'll look forward to seeing you hopefully soon, my friend.
That'll be great. Thank you, Benjamin.
Bye-bye. That was Drew Imborski, a.k.a. The Crochet Dude. You can keep up with what Drew is doing at drewimborski.com. And I'm going to encourage you to jump up there and bookmark that site. Okay, you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back the host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Tammy. How are you today?
Pretty good. It's been a great day. Beautiful day here in Idaho.
Well, you know, it was not a bad day here in South Dakota. You know, it's always good to be back on the air. I love doing the show. I know you love doing the show. So what do you think about this whole change? It's pretty cool, don't you think?
I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be something new and exciting to explore. Change is always hard for people. I hope that everybody will hang in there with us.
I do too. But you know, the show is still the show, and we've got partners now. We've got to acknowledge them, and it's great to be with the folks at Prime Publishing, and glad to have you with us, of course, as well. So how was your week?
Pretty good. Working hard. I'm doing a little hat at the moment, so I'm thinking about things on our heads right at
Things
the shape
on
of
our
a head.
heads.
The shape of the head.
The shape of the head. That's a new hashtag we should put out there. The shape of the head.
Anyway.
So I always look forward to your report. And so what do you got for us this week that we can share with the Fiber Hooligans listeners?
Well, for the State of the Hooligan this week, I wanted to go with the theme of For the Birds. For those of you who see my Facebook posts, I've been obsessed with a pair of ospreys that are on a platform, on a telephone pole that I can see from my office window. I watch them pretty much all day long. I feel like I'm spying on them like Mrs. Kravitz. I watch them return to the nest every spring, and I cry on the day that I realize that they're gone in the fall. I watch the male build the nest. I watch the female rearrange it. And then the interminable wait to hear the little chirping of their little ones and to see their heads over the edge of their nest home and standing on the sides of the nest and stretching their wings. And when they fly away for the first time and they never return, in my head, I've named them the ospreys, Sharon and Ossie, of course. There's a lot of birds in my neighborhood. I took a bike ride the other day and I saw a heron and mallard ducks with their babies in the canal. There was killdeer and quail and Canadian geese, of course, and lots of other birds that I'm unfamiliar with. And I also have a cousin with MS that lives in Bellingham, and she rescues pet birds like canaries and parrots and all kinds. So there's always something about the birds that I seem to be noticing. Lately, there's been an article on the internet about and also, it was pointed out to us by one of our listeners, Linda, whose username is Addie Girl on Ravelry. She asked us if we would talk about the request for knitted birds' nests. In California, in San Rafael, is a bird organization called Wild Care, and they are asking for help from knitters for about 1,200 knitted nests, 1,200 nests. They feel that there's a benefit to the abandoned babies who cannot regulate their body temperature. And rather than using only the recycled cottage cheese containers and butter tubs until the birds reach maturity, and then they can be released back into the wild. One of the articles quoted Miss Allison Hermance, a spokeswoman from Wild Care. She says it's the perfect base for baby birds. It's soft, it's warm, it moves like a nest. Their comfort is so much better. And with the nest, she says that they're quieter and the outcome is better. So they must have a higher percentage rate of survival because of the knitted nest that they use. The baby birds in their care, which is about half of the animals that they take in, eat every 45 minutes or so. So they have to change the nest pretty often. They wash them and reuse them over and over again. They need different sizes, bigger ones for doves and smaller ones for sparrows. They especially like the nests from new knitters because the stitches are tighter, and that makes a more comfy nest. So I looked up the website, which is babybirdsnest.org, and they're asking for wool nests with the instructions to make like a felted cup or a bowl shape. The felting projects for beginners, I think, are awesome because the imperfections, or what I call the design elements, they disappear in the felting process. So even kids can make the nests, and they feel important because they can what they can create and help with this project. I also see on their website that they've received, at this point in time, less than 100 of the 1,200 nests they're asking for, which is less than 10% of what they need. So I'm looking through my scraps of Brown Sheep Company's Lamb's Pride from an afghan that I'm making for my husband to see what I might be able to do. And I'm hoping that others will also give it some thought, and maybe some of us will be able to send some nests to help these little little birds within the WildCare organization.
Well, this is a very cool story. Can you remind us again about where our Fiber Hooligan listeners can go and learn more about this?
So WildCare, I wrote down the website. I'm not seeing it, but the instructions for the bird's nest is their website, babybirdnest.org, and I'll put these links up in our Ravelry group.
Well, very cool. I mean, this sounds like kind of a cute thing to do, and, you know, who doesn't love baby birds, right?
Right. Who doesn't? They're so cute.
Yeah, they're so cute. Well, cool. You know, again, I always love your shows. Your segments are so great because we break, you know, usually break out of the traditional thing and bring something new and unique to the Fiber Hooligan listeners. So, you know, this is great. So thank you again for another great segment, Tammy, and we'll look forward to hearing from you next week.
Next week? Yes. Thank you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook group and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow up to anything you might have heard on the show. Next week, my guest will be Patty Lyons. Patty Lyons is a nationally recognized knitting teacher and technique expert who is known for teaching the why, not just the how, in her pursuit of training the mindful knitter. She specializes in sweater design and sharing her love of the much maligned subjects of gauge and blocking. After deciding to leave her previous life as a Broadway stage manager to follow her passion and work in the knitting world, Patty managed a New York yarn store, and then in 2008, she joined Lion Brand Yarn to create the Lion Brand Yarn Studio in New York City, where she served as the studio director for 5 years. Patty now teaches nationally at guilds and knitting shows around the country, such as Vogue Live, Knit and Crochet, the official show of TKGA and CGOA, and Stitches. Patty's popular classes can also be found online at Knitting Daily, which is from Interweave Press, and Craftsy.com, and her Improve Your Knitting class was named Craftsy's most popular class of 2013. Patty designed for yarn companies like Cascade, Taki Stacy Charles, and her designs and knitting articles can be found in Vogue Knitting, Creative Knitting, Knitters Magazine, Knit 123, and Knit Style magazines. There's a great quote from knitwear designer Melissa Liebman about Patty that I'd like to read to you. Patty Lyons has done more to promote the pure love of knitting in New York City than anyone I can think of. Her enthusiasm for the craft is surpassed only by her dedication to quality education. The industry is lucky to have her. Patty loves to knit, crochet, spin, and has even dabbled on the knitting machine. She is currently attempting not to get sucked into another yarn craft, but weaving is looking pretty interesting. Patty lives in Brooklyn with her husband, a full room of yarn, and her rooftop garden. But she'll be taking a break from her busy schedule and her rooftop garden to join us for what should be a great show. I hope you'll tune in so I can share this wonderful lady with all of you. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. Of course, if you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your question or email on the podcast. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeCrochet.com for their sponsorship today. I'd also like to thank my wonderful editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all of their help. I'd like to thank my very gracious guest, Drew Imborski, for his superb interview and being so wonderful to give us his time today. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.